Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey guys, welcome to Steel Wars. I am comedian Steel Saunders and I do love Star Wars. And this is day 3 of our Star Wars Celebration live blog pod. The reason I sound like this is because it's about 5 in the morning and I'm up to meet Dominic and some of the crew at Celebration to get in line to get a wristband for the Future Filmmakers panel, the final panel of Celebration. Hopefully it'll be a big one, lots of special guests apparently. And it's been the best fun, so ready for a super fun day. So let's see what we see. Hey guys, it's about 9:30. We've got our passes. I did a bit of periscoping, which was super fun. I'm thinking about getting into the periscope. And we just had breakfast at a hotel, which was awesome, courtesy of our friend Rusty. Cheers, man. And we got to have a chat with my pal, Star Wars author Adam Bray, for a bit. So awesome to catch up with him. We have to do a full-length Star Wars, Steel Wars episode with him pretty soon. And now I'm off to the Star Wars Rebels press conference, which should be really good. I'm part of the press and I'll be conferencing. They'll be with Sam Witwer. And I really want to ask him a question about the Helisabers from the series finale of season 2, because that was something that I loved the episode, but they stuck out to me as something that didn't, would have rather them not be in it. So I'm keen to hear what his reaction was to the reaction to the Helisabers. So let's see what goes down.
You talked about how, due to the lead time, it's hard for you to bend to fan reactions. And one of the funnest things about being a Star Wars fan is debating reactions to little things. And I'm wondering, doing it so far in the past, is it like a lucky dip for each like episode for how fans react? Like in the season finale of season two, like everyone just loved it. But then, like, a thing like the Helisabers had a really strong pro and con reaction. Is that, like, a weird thing for something that you did so long ago that people pick that thing to, like, debate about? Do you have an idea that's going to happen in advance?
You know, I get a micro reaction because of my crew. They're all, as I've said, fans of varying levels. And so anything we decide to do in story, you see these reactions. It's almost like some kind of scientific testing. So some of them like the Helisabers and some of them don't. I like the show, so I do it. If it's something that they really don't like, I have to change stuff. The writers will give you the first reaction, but then once we have a script, I read it out loud so the team's going to execute it. So once Henry and I finalize the script, I sit down with the outside director and the story guys that are going to do all the shots, and I read it out loud and portray everything to them and explain the staging and shots I'd like and everything. But as I read it, I watch them. And you know, you can see like your friends, they're quiet, they kind of like eye roll or they kind of sink. And all the time, I'm like, what, you think that's lame? And they get really awkward. Like, no. If it's lame, I want to know now. It's lame. If that doesn't work, I want to know. And they'll say, yeah, well, I didn't really like it. I'm like, feel the same way, I'd like to change it. You're trying to hit this thing as many times as you can to get it to be good before it's gone. That's everything we do. And on a TV show, I have a lot less kicks at the can, I call it. So you're just desperate to get, like the finale last year, I got it actually in front of as many eyeballs as possible at work that I could to get reactions, except probably the last 2 minutes. The last 2 minutes was no dialogue. That I left alone for the most part and let very few people see it. I let a couple of people see it just to gauge their reaction. But for the most part, I left it alone. And then I brought Simon Kimberly and Kerry Harden to look at it because I needed to make some final changes to it. I knew it, and I just couldn't see it. And I knew they would. And they did, and it really, I thought, made the thing excel to another level. So you're just always aware of it because the people that are working on it are very critical of their own work. So it's my job to let them know when, okay, yes, let's change it, or you're overreacting. Just because something's new doesn't mean we shouldn't do it. We always need to push the threshold, you know. And, you know, I've always said it. I didn't know there were snow walkers until I saw Empire. Mm-hmm. I didn't know there were speeder bikes until I saw Endor. You know, I didn't know an ATTE could go off a cliff until I decided it could.
Well, that's true.
Well, I mean, that was the funny one. It was Henry Gore. I was like, you know, Henry, we should take this ground out because it was level. I said, let's put it on the cliff. And Henry goes, can we do that? And I was like, yes, Henry. We can do that. You know, because now we're making a story. And, you know, it's disappointing if people don't like it, but that means I would have changed the way I did it. I mean, what can you do? We thought it was a good idea at the time.
Quick follow-up, is there anything that, like, that people react, like, so strongly to that you didn't think was going to be such a big thing that you're like, oh, I wish we had to put more of that in?
That is the more likely thing that happens, is that you go, oh, they really like that, I wish we had more of that. You know, but if we don't have more of it, it means it wasn't important to the story, you see? And so if we were just putting more of it in there because...
That's the sentence.
Yeah, so... Yeah. Well, it seems like that'd be a great idea. It probably wasn't. Like, my crew was all about Huffer Pigs for a while. They loved that day. And I was like, you know, guys, I really think you're...
What about what?
They're the pigs that blow up like a balloon.
Oh.
I was like, I really don't think that's where we want to go. I don't think, while they're funny in that episode, I don't think we want a bunch of that.
It was all Huffer Pigs off.
And
yeah.
I think that was a wise decision.
I think so too. So, you know.
But there is a novel coming out.
At least the balloon would be fun.
That would be great.
That would be great.
All right, you guys, it's 1:40, and I'm with someone that's very proud that they called the time perfectly when I asked them. Welcome to the podcast, Steel Wars podcast listener, Sophie. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Now, you're saying that I somehow got you into Star Wars.
Yeah, so I've been listening to the Weekly Planet, and they kept talking about Episode 7, and I was like, whatever, I don't care, I don't like Star Wars. And then Mason went on your podcast, so I was like, oh, I guess I'll listen. And I kind of ended up watching all of the Star Wars in 2 days and then going to watch the new one, and now I'm obsessed.
Well, that's awesome that you, like, I've met so many Weekly Planet listeners that, like, listen because of James and Mason, so that's really cool. And they have, I guess, like, to my, I don't know, they're very polite. They're very polite fans.
Yeah, I think we're pretty all right.
Do you ever wonder, James, he's mysterious, he's got this goat head, he doesn't reveal his identity. Do you ever wonder what he looks like underneath?
I saw a picture of him on the internet the other day and it scared the shit out of me. I did not expect it at all.
You saw him? I thought he was. Yeah. I thought there was no imagery.
So did I. And then there was this one photo, it got taken down very quickly, but there was this one photo.
Oh my God.
And it wasn't what I pictured. Apparently he doesn't have a goat head and I was shocked.
It's more, So that means there's less photos of James on the internet than there were pre The Force Awakens of Luke Skywalker. Because there was one of him. What is going on? Lucasfilm need to use the security that the Weekly Planet uses.
clearly they need to get in contact and discuss that.
So you've just been here one day today?
Yeah, just the one day.
And what have you seen? What do you like?
I've seen everything, I think. I've been walking around for quite a while and trying not to spend all of my money, because money is nice to have. But yeah, there's so much here and everyone...
Don't start podcasting then.
No.
Get into YouTube, because that's where the cash is. Isn't it, James? Yeah. Goat heads just rolling in change.
The key is the yellow text. The yellow text is the key to money.
So he tells me. Apparently he invented the yellow text. He invented... putting a font in yellow.
Clearly he's the pioneer.
And so what are you looking forward to in the next, all the stuff that's been announced over the weekend, what sort of got you excited?
I think I'm really excited for Rogue One. That's got my attention at the moment because it's the nearest thing, and it's nice to have a female lead again in another Star Wars movie, so that's nice.
You got a bit of Felicity Jones going in your face.
Yeah, I'll claim that. All right.
Do you rebel?
Yes.
Well, thanks for coming up and saying, hey, I really appreciate it. It's cool to meet you.
No worries. Thank you for having me.
Nice.
I think it's Tarkin. I think it's Ezra. I think it's the reincarnated ghost of Anakin, who was Rey, who's been morphed into another Sith-loving creature. If you are sick of Snoke theories as much as I am, you have to get the Steel Wars Your Snoke Theory Sucks t-shirt, screen printed, not heat pressed, on the highest quality AAA tube t-shirt and designed with the beautiful vintage Kenner font in mind. You will turn heads and get laughs with the Your Snoke Theory Sucks t-shirt, and you'll support the sweet, sweet Steel Wars podcast. And if you're a Steel Wars supporter, you get 15% off. Pre-sale is up now on steelwars.com. Hey guys, this is me in the future recording this. There was an incident with the memory card, so a few interviews were lost. We will talk about what happened to those at the conclusion of the podcast when we have a normal memory card again. But the next segment is the final panel of Star Wars Celebration. It's the Future Filmmakers panel in full. So if you've seen clips of it online, this is the full thing. If you don't want to listen to the filmmaker panel and you just want to skip to the conclusion of our Star Wars Celebration coverage, we do a sort of like a 15-minute wrap-up at the end. Skip forward about an hour and 5 minutes. But the panel was awesome. Why not kick back, take the time, and enjoy.
Gentlemen, are you ready to learn about the future of the Star Wars universe? Are you ready?
Yeah.
Some future film directors of the Star Wars universe. It is time for our final panel of the day here at Star Wars Celebration. It's at the celebration stage. So only one person can bring you the future of the Star Wars universe. So right now, up on your feet for Pablo Hidalgo!
Star Wars Celebration in the books. I can't believe 3 days went by so quickly. Who here was here all 3 days? That is the right way to do Celebration. That's the best way to see as much as possible, to see as much as possible about what's coming up. I mean, we've had some amazing things in this room. We had a look at Rogue One. Who was here for that panel? And then we had Star Wars Rebels, a preview of season 3, also in this room. And if you were lucky enough, you got onto the show floor and you took a trip to Tatooine through virtual reality, trials on Tatooine via ILMX. Who tries that? Now that's all amazing stuff, and that's all stuff that's coming out in 2016. But we're not here today to talk about 2016. No, we're talking about what comes after that, and that's what this panel's all about. We did a version of this panel at the last celebration. I don't know who went to that. Did anyone see my conversation with Gareth Edwards? So, just to set some degree of expectations, we're talking about movies that are quite far away. So, that's gonna, you know, limit the amount of things we can really show you, but at the same time, this is the first time we're going to have any public conversations about these movies. And I'm talking about Star Wars Episode 8. And the upcoming untitled, and I should say untitled as if Star Wars Episode 8 isn't untitled also, but this is also untitled, Han Solo standalone movie. So, who better to talk about the future than two of the key architects who are making that future happen day in and day out at Lucasfilm? Please join me in welcoming together the head of Lucasfilm and the SVP of development, the head of the story group. These are my bosses, Kathleen Kennedy and Kiri Hart. Treating you.
This has been, I don't use the word awesome very often. I just want to say that because I don't know why.
But true, she doesn't.
I'm going to say that this has been beyond awesome. Absolutely incredible. We're having a great time.
Yeah, it's been amazing.
Now, before we get into the future, I want to kind of turn back the clock about a year and talk about what I mentioned here in this intro. And we did this future filmmaking discussion back in Anaheim. It was the Sunday, the last panel. And what I'm thinking about that now, which is kind of funny in reflection, is there was so much internal discussion and debate about, will they understand what a standalone movie is?
Do you guys understand?
Thinking back now, reflecting on that, what are those thoughts now that, you know, Rogue One is so close to coming to the world?
I think for me it's been really satisfying to see how people are embracing everything that we were able to share about Rogue. And, you know, it's something that I think is a dream sort of coming to fruition that we talked about last year, and that's really exciting.
You know, I also have to say that when the first trailer was up in April, that's really when I think we knew that it was you guys that were helping us do that, because the conversation online, you got it right away. And the conversation showed us that we weren't going to have to go through some lengthy explanation, that it was pretty clear about what we were doing, and everybody seemed to be really excited. So needless to say, that made us excited.
So thank you, all of you, for helping tell the world.
Yes, thank you.
How special these films are. So, switching gears to now the episodes, the Star Wars saga content. You know, Episode 7 was really well in development. It was in production, I believe, when, you know, we had to start turning towards, well, what happens next? Who's in charge of what's next? So, how did... I'm going to do this before we invite him out so that we don't have to embarrass some of us here. So, how...
Well, that's embarrassing.
Well, we will. No, we'll embarrass him differently once he comes in. So how did your eyes settle upon... Hey, get back there. I see you back there. How did your eyes settle upon Rian Johnson?
Well, yeah, I have to say I was a huge fan of Rian's early on. In fact, I had met Rian a couple of times before actually taking on the role of being the president of Lucasfilm. So when Kiri and I started talking about who the directors might be that we would consider, Rian was way at the top of the list right away, because I think many of you who know his films, Brick and Brothers Bloom, and then what he did with Looper, Brian had those sensibilities that combine an ability to have real substance in his dramatic structure, but also an amazing sense of humor. And I have to say, in watching him on the set of episode 8, I don't say this about many people, I think Ryan moves the camera as well as Steven Spielberg. So you guys are in for a real treat.
Bring him out while his head can still fit through the archway. You know him, as we said, from such amazing movies as Brick, The Brothers Bloom, and Looper, which he wrote and directed, and I dare say, also the best damn episode of Breaking Bad ever done. Please welcome Mr. Ryan Johnson. Man, Phil and Chris are going to have a tough hug to top there, really.
They're going to be a little, like, pile on
top. He did warn us that he was going to hug me on Twitter, so for those of you who are live tweeting, please confirm that that indeed happened.
He gave you a fair warning, my friend. Yeah.
So, Ryan, just to set people's understanding of timeline in mind, I mean, you started at episode 8 while episode 7 was very much still in production.
I did, yeah, they were still shooting, actually, here in London. They were still shooting episode 7, and so, I was thinking about that today, because obviously, Colin is doing the same thing while we were in production with episode 8. He was starting to think about 9, and I know it was kind of strange, like, because one of the first things I did was went up to San Francisco and spent about 6 weeks kind of figuring out the story, and I would go in a few times a week and sit down with these guys and with the story group and just hash it through, and we would watch dailies that were coming in from 7. And at that point, it was just a script and kind of the dailies that we were seeing. And I was thinking about that. I think it was probably really healthy that in thinking about where the story goes next, it was entirely just based on our reactions to it as opposed to based on the phenomenon that it would become, or the cultural reaction to it. It was just a very personal, what do we connect with these characters, and where did they go next? Which I think was a good thing.
Yeah, you were coming to understand who our new leads, our new heroes and villains. You were coming to understand who Rey, Finn, Poe, and Kylo were just as they were actually still coming together.
Yeah, it really was a unique experience.
So, when it came to, you came aboard, and this is just a tip for any future filmmakers, a real smart way to get your foot in the door at Lucasfilm, if you ever have a meeting with us, is to bring homemade ice cream. Our very first story meeting with Ryan, he's like, he surprises us all by bringing us ice cream. He's like, you realize we're going to expect
this, man.
Yeah, we're going to expect this from now on. No, but what you did, which I thought was really great, is we began sort of a film camp, so to speak. Ryan assembled movies that he thought it was important for us to watch and understand his point of view about them so that we'd have this common language. And I would love for you to share some of the titles that we watched.
Well, it was also stuff that I really wanted to, because we were in the middle of, it's the middle of coming up with what the stuff was going to be, and it was also stuff where I thought it would be really good to rewatch this. And it's funny, like at the time, so we were, it was 12 o'clock high, it was Letter Never Sent, it was, what else did we watch?
Bridge on the River Kwai.
That's right, Bridge on the River Kwai, Dam Busters. Which one?
Three Outlaw Samurai.
Oh, that's right, Three Outlaw Samurai, that's right.
We watched Hooper. No, wait, no, we didn't watch Hooper. You and I watched Hooper separately.
That was a different experience.
Let's hear that story.
We'll get to that. But it's funny, actually, watching we're just at the end of production right now, and going through and looking at the film that we put together and looking back at the movie, like particularly 12 O'Clock High, there was a good seeing, oh my God, a lot of that made it, made it in there. Like, at the time, it was just like, oh, this will be kind of a fun bonding thing, and maybe there will be things here or there. But it ended up actually being a really, really crucial part of it.
Watched Gunga Din, I remember that.
Gunga Din, sure.
Yeah, yeah. Watch that. And we watched Sahara, not the Matthew McConaughey Sahara, the Humphrey Bogart Sahara, where he's a tank commander. And my favorite part is, like, we're at Skywalker Ranch, and we're sitting there, we're watching this, and Ben Burtt sticks his head in. And his first question is, who's watching Sahara?
And it made him love us.
Yeah, totally. It's like anyone who'll dig up Sahara and watch it in the theaters, that'd be good people. So when we announced that episode 8 was in production, we had a little video that we showed of you basically recreating the scene between Mark and Daisy at Skellig. So can you talk about that?
Yeah, that was a really surreal way to start the whole thing out. So it was when we started coming up with, you know, I started coming up with the story, I realized that I didn't even really think about it, the notion that we were going to end up breaking kind of a long-standing Star Wars tradition, and for the first time, this movie is going to start right where the last one left off. This is like, I don't want to skip ahead. That last moment of 7, I want to see what happens next. And so just because of the demands of the story, that's what it ended up being, which meant we went back to Skellig, and we were only able to get a couple days of shooting there, and it was months before we started principal photography. So it was really the first thing that we did, and it was a very surreal, I mean, the island itself is this amazing, it feels like you're stepping into a history, it feels like there is something very mystical and magical about the island. Rick Carter had described it to me before I went there in his very Rick Carter way. And it's a very Rick Carter place. It's like an incredibly mystical place. So to be there and be the first thing that we're shooting is Mark and Daisy standing up on Christ's saddle and Skellig Michael. And it was just so, it was an appropriately surreal beginning to the whole experience.
And this was before anyone really knew, like, that moment would become so iconic in the world. So wow.
It was good.
Yeah, you didn't need that extra pressure.
I was not so paralyzed by fear. Yeah, it's good.
Let's talk about working with some of the classic cast. Before we go into that, I just want to understand, like, what your level of Star Wars appreciation was going into all this, and then what it meant to have Mark Hamill and Carrie Fisher and people like Anthony Daniels in front of you.
Yeah.
And they're yours to direct now.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I feel like it, and in a lot of conversations I've had just over the past few years, I feel like you almost want to lead with an apology. Like, I know everyone has a "this is what Star Wars means to me" story. Yeah. It sounds almost cheesier, but it is something that's so integral. Star Wars was the first, I have this memory of my dad putting me in the car to take me to see Star Wars, and I asked him, where are we going? He said, we're going to see the most amazing thing you've ever seen. And I... And he was right, and that combined with, and it's funny, as much as the movies were something that I really reacted to, I think even bigger, and that's why it's fun, like, walking the floor and, like, seeing the toys, and I don't know, I feel like, because back when movies came out, it wasn't like we had them on our iPads, like, it was, you had to put your name in the waiting list at the video store, and then you got the VHS, and then you and your friends watched it for 24 hours straight. It was like you didn't actually get to see the movie much. So what you had were those toys, and I think even more than the experience of the film, the fact that the first stories we were telling in our heads as kids were in that universe with those toys. I think that's why, and I'm sure, and I think several people have said, had the same experience of walking on the Falcon set for the first time, and unexpectedly kind of really getting choked up out of nowhere. And what it was is flashing back to being a kid and all the stories I told inside my Kenner, you know.
The back of the Falcon.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And suddenly you're standing in it, and there is just an intense emotional reaction that that happens. So anyway, that's that part of it.
So now,
as I was saying before, you now have Luke Skywalker and Princess Leia and C-3PO and R2 and Chewbacca in front of you with your rolling camera, and you're telling them what to do. I mean, what's that like for you?
It was an incredible experience on many different levels. Ultimately, though, this was one of the things that the whole process was kind of about. You come into it with those feelings of deep nostalgia, but then you realize your responsibility ultimately is to get beyond that very quickly and to ultimately tell a story that it feels alive right now. And it's about where you're at right now, I guess. And that, I guess, was kind of like the ultimate responsibility of it, is to sit in front of Mark, sit in front of Luke Skywalker, and then have those feelings of, I'm sitting here talking to Luke Skywalker, so it's kind of weird. And it's, yeah, and then to get to know Mark and get to know him as an actor and then start working through the script and then get back into the actual work of filmmaking and telling a story, the same way that you do with any other film, basically, you know, to get to the point where you're just, I don't know if I'm expressing this right, but it was surreal all around, I guess.
And now the new cast, you've got, Daisy and John are back, Oscar's back. Adam's back. They've all had their first, oh my goodness, I'm in Star Wars experience with the last film. So how did you find them coming into this movie?
They were wonderful, and you're right, there was that kind of feeling of, there was that big explosion of the first one and now the second, but it ended up serving, I think, what this second film is in a very good way, because the first film is this incredible explosion of adventure and excitement that sets up these characters, and then just out of necessity, it's very natural that the second film is where we start kind of zooming in on the characters and kind of taking them, seeing, okay, really kind of getting to the heart of them and challenging them and pushing them deeper. And so I think the actors were all very excited about that.
Yeah. So you are one of, I think, the first director who had a public presence on social media before we announced that you were our director.
Is that what I have?
Yeah, that's an additional bullet point under IMDb trivia for anyone who's editing that. So what was that like? Because you were so accessible. The world, to be honest, the world knew before we were even able to formally announce that you were directing Episode 8. So you must have got a lot of traffic coming your way, asking to confirm or to talk about it online.
I love being on the internet. I love being, like, I've always loved social media. Even with, like, my first film that I did, Brick, which was before Twitter, way back before this Twitter existed. But I created, like, a message board on my website for people to come and talk about it. I've always really just loved being out there. And I guess I was a little nervous in terms of what something on this scale would do. Would I still be able to enjoy it the way I have before? And so far, it's been wonderful. So far, it's still been, the same sort of thing of just engagement with people. And so, I don't know, so far so good. It just feels kind of very continuous.
Do we have any people here who follow Ryan on Twitter or Instagram?
I apologize.
Well, speaking of Instagram, you've been very generous in sharing some photos from the set that you yourself took during the making of this movie.
Yeah.
So we have some here. I don't know, we can show them up and see if there's any stories to tell. You see that there?
Oh, these are our fantastic background crowd who were in the film. It's funny, you realize as you do these films how important the background players are, and you realize how deeply embedded they are from the original films in your head, some of the background, and you start paying more and more attention to them as you're directing. And we had a really, really great crowd that really took to it and gave a great performance in the background scene.
It's funny, in black and white, this looks like you're making a period picture here.
There's a lot of them, and there's some shots of, I don't know if they're in here, but like Gary, our cameraman, when he kind of has a 70s fro a little bit, and when he's behind that camera, like on a dolly in like a, you know, resistance hall, a ship hallway, you look at the shot and you're just like, oh, that could be, yeah, that could be from the 70s. That'd be cool.
Let's take a look at another photo here. Yeah, that's...
Oh, yeah. So there, I think that's Billy. Yeah, I think that's Billy Lord, Carrie's daughter there, actually. And we actually, I know for a lot of the stuff I've posted, I apologize that a lot of it is kind of green screen in the background, and not to put down green screen, it's a great tool, but I just haven't wanted to like give anything away. But I just want to let everyone know the amount of sets that we've built for this movie has been absolutely outrageous. And a tremendous amount of practical sets. And we also had the luxury of doing things like this where we built exterior, interior sets of some of the ships. So we not only would be able to film inside them, but also do shots from the outside that weren't just like window comps and actually move into them. So we had fun.
Next photo, please.
Ah, this is Ireland. Yes.
We've got people from Ireland.
We love Ireland. Yes. and in addition to sets, but a big for a chunk of the film, we went out to Ireland, and actually, in addition to Skellig, we shot along the southwest coast of the west coast of Ireland, at a lot of really incredible locations, and. It was amazing getting out there a ways into the shoot and then suddenly having this whole other texture to the film open up in front of you, and just the natural beauty of that coastline. And to be able to put these actors out there and actually put them out and just film it and see, to stand behind the camera and have it feel like that, it was just incredible. Yeah.
Let's take a look at another one.
Oh, who's that guy? Who was that guy? I was very lucky to have the man in the cowboy hat come out to visit several times and spend some time on set. And you just immediately feel calm and at peace when Dave Filoni is standing back behind you. You feel like everything's going to be okay.
I gotta say, I mean, we talk about it a lot, but it's true. Kathy and Kiri make it's so accessible that any part of Lucasfilm that will benefit from being on the set, and anyone that you would benefit from having on the set, that communication and that, you know, flying from one side of the world to the other to come and help each other out, that's a reality of making Star Wars movies now.
Well, and it was nice, like even the time that I talked about when I was in San Francisco coming up with the story, Gareth was there, and they were coming up with Rogue at the same time. It would be like right down the hall. They were working on Rogue, and you'd come down and just say hi and take a look at the whiteboard and talk through stuff. And then Dave was doing, you know, just doing Rebels in the same, it was right there in the Presidio, and it had this kind of campus-like feel that, it's pretty cool.
Next photo.
Aha, yes. Shut these helmets, man. These helmets are bigger than you think. Like, you see pictures of them, you see them on screen, and then you see them in real life, and you're like, really? Oh my god. They're like, they're massive. And also, anytime that we were shooting a scene with these guys in helmets, I would start playing Daft Punk is playing at my house on my phone really loud. I think it got annoying.
Let's see, do we have any more? Yes.
Aha, yes. this is actually, this is my assistant, Leo, who was stuck in a TIE Fighter outfit. I had a lot of fun directing him ruthlessly. But it was. I don't know. This is another one of those shots, though, where, and there were a few of these sets where, you know, this or some of the stuff in the Falcon or the X-wings, where you put them in there and you frame them up and you look at the monitor and you're just like, oh my god, you just have that instant connection to it. I guess it's pretty cool.
Let's see if we have any more.
Are we now? All right.
Oh, my God. Yes, we do. So I guess, you know, this is probably, it's not the best kept secret in the world, but the production name for Star Wars Episode 8, who here knows it? Space Bear. Space Bear.
Production's done. I think it was kind of a code name.
Code name, that's right.
Yeah.
I gotta say, every one of our projects have code names. I'm not gonna tell you what it is, otherwise it defeats the purpose of telling you what the code name is. But you knew Episode 7 was Abco. Everything else coming forward has additional ones, but I gotta say, completely biased, but Space Bear is the best one.
It just made me so happy, because that panda logo was like, every time I saw that on official stuff, it just made me so happy. Like, on, like, officially printed budgets and stuff, to see that dumb little panda in his helmet up in the corner. It's like the story that, I don't know if this is true, but that Terry Gilliam named his production company for one of his films Poo Poo Productions, just so the lawyers would have to write it over and over.
Well, maybe we can look forward to some Space Bear merchandise at Celebration next year. That'd be amazing. But on that topic, because, this is in many ways, it's the Rogue One Celebration. I mean, Gareth had a great spotlight moment on this stage to tell the world about his movie. Next year, I think that's going to be your time to have a big showcase moment, and it also happens to be the 40th anniversary of Star Wars. So, what I'm saying is, you're going to be in Orlando, aren't you?
I think I'll be there.
Okay.
I'm looking forward to it. And by the way, this is kind of like the first time I'm coming out and kind of talking about this thing that we've been doing, and I was very nervous about to come out here, but just seeing all you guys and seeing just the, I don't know, the warmth and the, I'm really looking forward to the next year and a half. I'm really looking forward to showing you guys more and more of what we got, and I think we're all going to have a really good time together.
And our next guests are just beginning their initial journey.
Oh, these kids.
Yes.
Oh, these kids.
They have so much to expect and learn. We are talking about a directing team who have been responsible for such movies as 21 Jump Street, the Lego Movie. These are the guys that put Everything Is Awesome in your head for months and months on end. So let's bring them on. Please welcome Chris Miller and Philip Lord. Yeah, let's get more double directing teams. That was fun.
Yeah. All right, I'll get on that.
So you guys are just starting off your journey here. And we've got to set expectations here. This is really, really super early. Where are you guys in terms of your production?
We just moved here 2 days ago. and so we're very, very early. We're still working on the script with Larry and John Kasdan. A lot of early pre-production on the movie with, you know, design work and that sort of thing.
Now, you mentioned Larry and John Kasdan. Kiri, I can just hear in my head you telling the story best in terms of Larry's interest in this project and the talent attached to it.
Yeah, Larry, there's nobody on the stage who doesn't love and respect Larry so much for all that he's contributed to Star Wars, and I think that as the executive producer of this particular movie and the writer, along with his son John, he had a lot of passion for the idea of Chris and Phil coming aboard to direct this movie, and he was quite vocal about it in the way that Larry can be. and really, I think, had a tremendous amount of belief in them and a feeling that they were just the right people to do this, and I think that that ended up being really meaningful to all of us as we, you know, went forward and put the whole thing together and made it happen. And now it's real, and everybody's working together. It's pretty cool.
One thing, and the only reason I'm bringing this up is because this panel isn't streaming. If this was streaming, I wouldn't do this, right? But at Lucasfilm, everyone has a George impression. Everyone has one. You can't help it. And one of the things I noticed is the more we got in working with Larry, we all developed Larry impressions.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Not that I expected Gary to do it. Right. I don't think you're doing it. It was like, Gary, it's got to be these guys.
It has to be these guys, Gary.
So,
Gary.
Trust me.
You got to make it happen.
He was pitching really hard, and he was so happy that you guys said yes to this project. So, and we all are, because it's in great hands.
I mean, such an honor from Larry Kasdan, our hero from growing up, watching all of those movies. And I went to see Grand Canyon in the theater opening weekend. That's how big of a fan I am from Lawrence Kasdan.
You're like a real Larry head.
Yeah, I was in high school. So this is a dream come true just from this part alone, not to mention the rest of it.
So, can't get too much into what the movie's about, but obviously everyone knows it's about Han Solo. Woo! So, what does Han Solo mean to you? What does Han Solo mean to you?
Oh, gosh. I sort of relate to him. He doesn't want to do anything that he's told. When you tell him not to do something, it makes him want to do it more. He's very sarcastic, and at the end of the day, he's unreasonably optimistic. And I think that's why, you know, we fall for that guy and why we got so excited about making this movie, is that this kind of dichotomy between this kind of grouchy, seemingly cynical guy with the biggest heart in the galaxy. And to me, that's a great thing to make a movie about.
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy who on the playground, everybody was fighting who gets to play Han Solo. And in my family, when my sisters and I would play Star Wars as kids, I was always Han Solo. My one sister was Princess Leia, and my other sister was Princess Leia's sister, Margo, which is a character we...
could work her into this story, yeah.
Anyway, if you want to do any last minute research, I might slip in... Yeah. The extra Skywalker.
There is another other.
Skywalker.
But the guy, he's a maverick. He's a scoundrel. He's clever, but he's not smart. And he's, you know, he wants to present himself as like this cool tough guy, but in the end he always does the right thing. And so I think that's why you love him so much, and it's why he's been one of the most iconic characters of all time.
Yeah. Now, you've, of course, worked with Han Solo before. You've worked with the Millennium Falcon before.
That is true. We did, in the Lego movie, Han Solo and Chewbacca both appeared, and the Millennium Falcon were all in that movie. And as I read, all of the films with Star Wars are canon, so that means that... That is canon.
Yeah,
and,
which means Batman will be appearing.
That Batman on the Millennium Falcon is canon in Star Wars movies.
Let's see, do we have that clip? Can we refresh our memories of
a spaceship just gonna appear out of the blue? Are you kidding me? That's fake.
Supposed to be halfway to Naboo for sweet party right now. This hyperdrive keeps malfunctioning, taking us to loser systems like this.
Captain Solo, we must go. You know how perturbed I get if we are not punctual.
Droid's right. Let's roll.
Hold on, eh?
This might be the right galaxy after all, because I see a heavenly body.
Ooh, whoa, I have a boyfriend. And it is super serious, right, babe?
Of course it's serious.
Yeah.
Got room for just one dude?
Whoa, babe!
He's a cool dude like you.
You're trying to bail on us!
I'm not trying to bail
on you! You asked them if you could go with them on their partnership!
That thing is filled with bon vivants.
You speak French now?
Babe, look, if this relationship is ever going to work between us, I need to feel free to party with a bunch of strangers whenever I feel like it. I will text you.
Where'd you get that sweet space cake, brother?
Party time!
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone here, I want you to do me a favor if you're tweeting this, because this isn't streaming. Please tweet that we shown an exclusive clip featuring Han, Chewbacca, and Millennium Falcon, directed by Chris Miller and Phil Lord. Just tweet that. It's absolute truth, and only you guys got to see it, because this isn't going out the door.
Spoiler.
Batman cameo, the subject of cameos. Let's talk about that. You guys were this close beginning at the Rogue One.
Yes, we were visiting, doing early prep work here, and we've gotten to know Garrett through this process, and so he invited us to come on the set, and...
Where'd you get that?
But...
We looked solemn.
Yeah.
We're getting into character.
Yeah, I got to pick up.
That's my hard look.
Why did they cut you guys?
No, we didn't get cut. The worst part about it was that we were gonna shoot this thing, but my whole family's moving in here for a year, and I had to go look at a school for my son.
We couldn't be in Star Wars because your son had to go to school. Thanks, Chris.
So I got all dressed up, waited around, and then they're like, okay, what are you going to do? I was like, I gotta go. I can't show up to the school interview looking like this. Had to leave.
I'm so bummed you didn't go like that.
with the giant blaster.
Yeah, I feel like they would have had to let him in.
Oh, you got so close. But you know, you did actually get a cameo. It's Ryan.
Yes, my producer, Rom, and I, we chose wisely. We chose, the two dudes who we knew would be in the movie that can't cut us out, because we're the two dudes in the firing chamber. Just are. We pull the levers and go like that. And seeing Rom in that moment. His hair just barely fit into that helmet.
You may fire when ready.
What we're discovering now is that cameos are now a form of currency among our directors. Because appearing in episode 8.
We stuck Gareth in there. We did stick Gareth. Where is he? Do we have a...
I think we have a picture of him.
Look at that.
He's a natural. He's a natural. Look at that fuzzy little guy.
Neil Scanlon's team does amazing work.
Do we have another picture of him or no? Is that that? Okay, well, so I'm sure you guys will get your shots to be in a Star Wars movie. We have
some
coming out.
Yeah, maybe in 9.
Well, maybe not getting close with Colin. Although, I understand, Chris, you actually are. That wasn't your only shot. You were actually in a Star Wars movie.
I am in Empire Strikes Back, actually.
All right. I think we have a clip here. We're going to bring the house lights down and take a look at Chris Miller's unforgettable role in The Empire Strikes Back. Here we go.
That was me. For real. For real. Stormtrooper number 2 in the re-release of Empire Strikes Back.
1997 special edition. I think we have some incredibly bootleg photos of you. No, not that one.
Yes.
That one's available for the public.
So,
there
I
go.
Was... I was interning at ILM 20 years ago, and they sent out an email for 5'11 people to be stormtroopers, and I happened to be 5'11, so I got to be, but they said that you're not allowed to take pictures with your helmet off. That was a Lucasfilm policy. So my friend, who was another stormtrooper, and I had a little, this is before digital photography.
Clearly.
I had a little Olympus camera, film camera, hidden in my lunch bag, and we snuck around the corner and took pictures of each other.
so respectful.
So I could be fired right now.
I'll have to look at the old employee handbook. That's what it says about that.
Sure.
And the fact that you took it on film, that means you had a... I can imagine you sweating it out as you took it out to be developed.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I was so disappointed how blurry and out of focus and washed out they were. I was like, no one's going to believe me. You believe me, right, guys? That's pretty tepid. They're like, some of them don't believe you.
All right, we're talking about you guys cameoing in movies. Let's focus on the actual actors who are in our Star Wars movies. And you've got a real challenge ahead of you. A character like Han Solo, everyone has an impression in their mind of what that character's like. So what's casting? What's that process like for you guys?
I mean, we thought from the very beginning this was the hardest casting challenge of all time. It means the biggest boots to fill you can possibly imagine. You know, try to get someone who can capture all of those essences that you think of as Han. And so we did a very, very, very exhaustive search. We saw over 3,000 people for the part.
All across the world.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Like, we casted like 5 or 6 different offices. Acting schools all across America and the UK.
It's like cowboy bars, like everything you can imagine. Trying to find someone who was like, wanted to make sure we turned over every rock to find someone who had the sort of charisma and the sort of maverick sort of swagger. And
turns out that was a total waste of money, because the person who got the part was the first person to audition. Literally the first person to walk in the door. Kathy, I apologize for wasting that. It's nice to be sure, though. Yeah. Okay.
Well, now that you're sure.
So, do you want to say who it is?
Yeah. This is the best kept secret in the identity of this person is Alden Ehrenreich. Yes.
And he's actually here today.
Celebration. Did you get any chance to look around the show?
No, I didn't.
Probably not.
No, this is my first taste of it. Yeah.
We're keeping you under wraps here, so maybe we'll put a helmet on you sometime and just kind of send you, well, now I told you so, I can't do that, can I? That's it. So what was it like? I mean, as I said, you were the first to audition, and then you had to wait while they wasted the time of 2,999
people. Yeah. I went in a few times, and just the whole time, I mean, when it first came along, I knew kind of everybody would be going out for it, and I read the sides, and I loved them, and I thought, all right, who knows, but let me give it a shot. And then I auditioned for about 6 months, and I went, the coolest part of that audition process was I went on the Falcon, and that is, I mean, kind of what you were saying, Ryan. It's like it's pretty unbelievable. And you get there, and you kind of have, as a kid, like this character, especially you play make believe, and you imagine, oh, and you kind of imagine what it would be like. So when you get there, you're like, oh yeah, here it is, you know? And it's pretty incredible. So I'm just very, very excited. Yeah.
So you're screen testing aboard the Falcon, because I imagine you're trying to see whether or not you have chemistry with the Falcon.
Yeah.
Any other co-stars that you would screen test with?
Yeah, Chewbacca. Which is pretty incredible. I'd never acted with a Wookiee, so that's a whole different thing, which is pretty, yeah, it's amazing. And I had the blaster, and we did the whole costume and everything, and it was awesome, yeah.
Chris and Phil, you were telling me that there was something particular about Alden's reaction, or perhaps maybe lack of expected reaction, because you watched thousands of people do that first discovery of the Falcon and the Chewbacca, and you saw a trend. But
oh, well, I mean, only the finalists made it onto the actual Falcon.
Oh, I see, all right.
And Chewbacca right. Wouldn't have put...
We wasted money, but not that much.
Yeah.
But you would say that there was a commonality in that reaction, though, right?
Yes, I mean, it's such a surreal experience for anybody to, like, all right, walk on, here's the Millennium Falcon, here's the, you know, here's, this is the lounge, this is the cockpit, and here's a 7'3" giant talking bear man, and for everybody it was, like, the first 20 minutes of, like, trying to shoot a screen test, everyone was just like,
We didn't even roll a camera. We're just like, they need to
I know,
get this
I know,
out of the
it's,
system.
It's pretty neat.
What was your trick, Alden, to not do that, to not freeze up by it?
Well, I mean, I mean, you're kind of so, it's like, there's something about it that just felt, like, so exciting that I think it that was more exciting than it was nerve-wracking. Like, actually being on the Falcon after having seen it for so long, it's just, yeah, it's pretty, you just kind of immediately go like, all right, cool, yeah.
So, who have you told?
Well, this is kind of where everybody's gonna find out. The one person I did tell was my mom, but this is basically where everybody's gonna find out. Although people have been coming up to me and saying congratulations, and I kind of go like,
That's a good response. Well, what was your mom's reaction?
She's pretty thrilled. It's amazing with this. Like with other roles I've gotten, people go like, wow, it's so exciting. And with this one, she was just like, what? You know, like, it's so, and she actually just recently, she's moving out of the house I grew up in, and she just found a box of my Star Wars toys and all the Han Solo action figures I had, so she just sent me a picture of all of those, yeah.
We have that photo. Do we have that photo? Do we? All right, well, we'll go.
You can
here we go. Here we go.
Sure, right. Some people out here have that toy.
You got Bossed too, nice.
I like the Tupperware.
Yeah, I like the setting. That's pretty good.
There's
you got some previs going on here.
Yeah, that's right. That's my mom's handwriting. Yeah.
She wants to be first camera operator on this movie, you know.
I love this, because then you got the doubly good news of that you're in a Star Wars movie and your mom never threw out your Star Wars toys.
Yeah, so that's right. That's,
you know, an incredible
maybe very disorganized. Yeah, that's true.
All right, so where are you guys in terms of you said you guys just moved to London to start this process. I mean, when are cameras going to roll on this movie, you figure?
Probably end of January, early February, right around then. So we've got a good 6 months of prep. There's a lot of sets to design and build and characters and robots, droids. And aliens and, you know, crazy creatures for Neil and his team to build. So it's a lot. There's a lot of prep work that goes into a movie like this. You can't just sort of like show up and be like, oh, we'll shoot at a Starbucks. Mm-hmm. You know.
And is this your first time working with a British crew?
Yeah, we're really excited. I mean, we're using a lot of the same crew that were on Ryan's movie and Rogue One. We're sort of some from each camp, and they are the best in the business. So it's, you can already tell from the people that were working with us, you know, going to be a dream working with people as talented as this.
So Ryan, having just completed your principal photography, or being just that close to completing it, any words of advice after having worked for months with this British crew, how to keep them happy?
Listen, kids. Tea.
Oh yeah, just some tea. Lay it on me, man.
No, I'm kind of envious. Like, I'm at being at the end of this, I kind of wish that we could just keep filming, because I don't know, I mean, you said it, it's just like the best people in the business. It's amazing, and I'm really envious that you guys get to, it's like, I feel like I'm coming out of a ride and seeing you guys in line about to go into it, and my hair is standing up, and I'm like, my eyes are wide, and I'm like, oh, but I'm really envious, I'm really excited for the experience you guys are going to have.
What football team should we root for to ingratiate ourselves?
Cowboys!
Oh, yeah. Maybe everyone
Broncos.
Says that.
Broncos, I think. Probably the, yeah.
Maybe the, yeah, the Denver Broncos.
Well, it seems only fair. I mean, we have a director offering advice to directors who are about to begin their journey. Alden, you're about to begin your journey in a Star Wars movie. It seems only fair to bring out an actor who's just recently completed something with two Star Wars movies under his belt now. Let's bring him out and see what kind of advice he has to offer. Would anyone be interested? Any fans of FN2186?
But this is amazing. There's so many of you. So thank you for having me.
Now, when we started this panel, I actually had Kiri and Kathy talk about Ryan when Ryan wasn't here so that we wouldn't embarrass him. But now that he's out here, feel free to embarrass him. What was it like to work with Ryan Johnson as your director?
Ryan is awesome. Ryan's awesome. I always like to say that he's doing an indie movie within a studio franchise. The character's been pushing in a new direction in a very, very cool way. And we're having fun. Having really, really good fun.
That's true.
Yep.
Spoilers? Let me face that one right here. No, no. You want to find out some spoilers. I'm not going to do that, but I do want to address something here. Yeah. Without spoilers, for people who are deeply concerned about Finn, because when we left him, he was in a coma, so can you assure us you actually walk around and talk and move and do something in episode 8, or...? Finn's okay, that's what I'm just trying to get.
We did at some point joke that it would be great to just have him be in a coma for the whole movie. You just keep coming back to him. His mother something.
But the story is very, very interesting. I've done this before. So it's very, very interesting to just keep it kind of like secret.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. But in terms of the process, the production, I mean, how did this shoot compare to The Force Awakens? Because The Force Awakens was your first exposure to being a Star Wars fan on a Star Wars set. Did any of that kind of,
I mean, it was my Han Solo action figure that I had from episode 7. Guys, there's more signatures on it. It's just it. Yeah, as a Star Wars fan, I get to come into work, I enjoy my time with, you know, new members of cast, and obviously Ryan's great with a new energy and a new take on a real story, and it feels like Star Wars, but then at the same time we have a new director to lead us in an interesting path, so it's really, really fun. I'm having fun.
So how much has your life changed now that, you know, you are Finn, a star of Star Wars?
I mean, I just got back from Tesco's, so no one bothered me. But you know, it's been fun. It's strange to see all these figures still. It's something that I haven't taken in. You know, oh man, you're playing Han Solo, man. Damn. Great, and Star Wars fans have been amazing. It's like the best fandom to be a part of. It's really, really cool.
So any words of advice for all of you?
I don't know, man. I really don't know. But, you know, you're going to be fine. You got that charm stuff down, don't you? And he's smiling just like, oh. It's great. No, it's going to be fun. Very, very good experience, man. Obviously, you've got a great head on you, so you enjoy the ride. Sure.
Take care, man.
And you know, one person that I met briefly in my stay here, because I've been here for a while, and maybe we can talk about it briefly, because I really enjoyed being here, was Kelly Marie Tran. And this is her first big movie, and it's a big Star Wars movie, and you know, the two of you have worked with her, so if you could talk about working with her.
I am so excited for you guys to meet Kelly. I don't want to say too much also because I want her to be able to come out and present herself properly down the line, but she's really something special.
We got a lot of great energy and a great addition to our Star Wars family. This is a family that keeps growing. Look, I mean, we've got the prequel trilogy represented here with Ryan and John, and we've got the new standalone programs represented here with Chris, Phil, and Alden, and it just feels like we need to represent the classic trilogy here. We need to... Mark Hamill and Tori.
Yeah! Woo!
Little tiny just born people in Princess Leia outfits, which I appreciate because I think that you swallow those outfits so the baby doesn't come out nude, which would be so embarrassing. So it's just, it's a fantastic thing. I've lived
never
with
heard
this.
That theory.
You have to think about that. That's why we're very sibling-like.
We've been fighting backstage with an American accent.
Now, What is the matter with you?
You can take me anywhere.
Well, I brought you here.
I know. And I promise you I'd be on my best behavior. You know what some of these people say? Are you guys really like brothers and sisters? I said, yeah, we fight all the time. We were not speaking to each other for years at a time.
Now we're not speaking to each other.
But we have a shared experience, and darn it, I will defend her with my life.
I do drive her crazy. He'll demonstrate that throughout the evening.
Dolly, you're a damn exasperating woman. That was actually Thornton Wilder's first title. The working title for Merchant of Yonkers was A Damn Exasperating
Woman. I was hoping you'd bring that up.
I know. It eventually became Hello, Dolly. See, I'm a font of...
He has so many stories like that, and that is what Star Wars is about. This is actually the new sequel. I know I'm not giving that away.
Oh, spill your guts.
Well, the new sequel is about a lot of stuff with Hello, Dolly.
Yes.
Hello, Gary. I'm just here to make sure Gary gets a part, at least in the next one.
There are no dogs, are there?
There should
be.
That's right.
Come on.
We can make that happen. We have the power.
You guys, there are enough pets in space, right? That's my contribution.
We love you for it. Ryan, is this a snapshot into what your production experience was like?
Talk to Colin. It was all this and more.
Oh, fantastic. I can't thank you all enough for coming and saying hi and wrapping up this celebration in such a memorable way. This is the Star Wars family. We're going to take some family portraits here before we wrap. And I want to remind everyone that the closing ceremonies are happening here. Warwick Davis is going to come out and recap an amazing past 3 days. This has been all of us. We're going to see you in Orlando where we're going to be able to talk about Star Wars and the upcoming Han Solo Star Wars movie. Please join me in thanking these amazing...
Guys, it is 5:30 on Sunday, and we're in the dismantled Star Wars underground. Thank you, says Dom. Little booth,
And we're done. We just had the last panel, which you would have heard a big chunk of. And there was a few interviews that I did this morning. So if people were that I interviewed and were hoping to hear it on the podcast, I apologize. Dom, explain what happened.
So before the show, they have these warm-up acts. They have a DJ and they have like a dude who's supposed to pump up the crowd. And one of the ways he tries to pump up the crowd is by throwing Star Wars memorabilia into the crowd. And he had a deflated BB-8 soccer ball, or football, as they're called here. And he chucked it over to our section where we were sitting. And our friend Rusty actually jumped up and grabbed it. But several other people also tried to jump up and grab it. And Steele had his laptop out and he was transferring some files, getting all that stuff onto his computer.
Content.
Yeah.
Bloody content, mates.
Yeah. Getting all this great content ready for you guys. And the dude next to him, not Rusty, on the other side, smacked into your laptop and
tried to jump over me while I was sitting down, yeah, working.
Mm-hmm. And he managed to crack your memory card, your little micro SD card, as well as the card reader, and basically destroyed the show. And
I'm getting choked up a little bit right now thinking about it.
Yeah, well, so everyone misses out on the amazing banter we had at 5 in the morning. Oh, and it also shattered Chris's only appearance. Yeah. So make it count, buddy. Here's Chris.
It's over, and I'm still excited. I still have energy.
What a dick.
Energy gone, as far as I'm concerned.
So I was furious, and...
Rightfully so.
And the dude was like, oh, when someone throws something into the crowd, you jump for it, don't ya? And I'm like, not over someone else that's got a laptop.
Yeah, you stand and reach and hope that it lands in your hands.
Yeah, you don't, like, do the, like, in Australia, what it's called from Australian rules football, it's a specky, where you jump on someone else to, like, grab the football. And this isn't football.
No.
We come to a place like Star Wars Celebration to avoid sport as much as possible.
We're good with pod racing and everything else is, you know.
Yeah, that's great. It's great stuff. Love the pod races. It's been an epic weekend. What did you guys think of the panel in the end?
I would say that it was underwhelming. I mean, I was expecting to see something. I don't know what specifically, but something. 'Cause
I should say, you saw Han Solo.
Yeah, but everything that we saw, we already knew. It wasn't anything new. It was, they were confirming things that were already, people knew was a thing, so.
What about the confirmation that it does actually start with that scene?
Yeah, it's not enough for me.
Oh, no. I know it's not a big reveal, yeah, but had you taken that as a given, or, because I was still like, there's a trick to it. That, in my head, I thought there was a trick to it, like a flashback or something.
I wasn't exactly sure, but I mean that's not enough to say, oh, this is how the movie begins. I mean, they could have said with Force Awakens, oh, the movie begins with a shot of a starship in space, and I'd be like, oh, okay, cool, that's like every other movie. So, you know, it's, if it had been a scene that was different, maybe that would have been a little bit more exciting, rather than just saying, oh, it just continues with the same scene.
I am wondering if we'll ever get feedback in the public domain of what George Lucas's thoughts are about that beginning, like, unless they are going to somehow do a from space and pan down.
They have to do that some way, somehow.
I think they will.
Yeah.
What I expect to happen is they're going to have some type of scene that sets up the rest of the plot of the movie, and then they're going to cut after that to the scene in Ahch-To.
Well, that's a time jump then, because
not if the stuff that sets up the plot happened concurrently or before the events of The Force Awakens.
Concurrently. Like one of those 24 ad breaks when it goes bum, bum, bum. Dom, what did you think?
It was pretty much exactly what I expected. I was hoping for some other stuff, but that was what I thought we'd get. We'd get some behind-the-scenes pictures, we'd get Alden Ehrenreich, and that'd be about it. It would just be a little bit of fun, a little bit of banter, nothing too much, nothing too big. You know, they didn't want to overshadow Rogue One. They kind of did that with Rebels, at least to the fandom, and so I don't think they wanted, they clearly weren't ready with anything else. They had nothing for Han Solo. They just finished Force Awakens, and they were kind of implying that maybe they had like a day or two left to do Episode 8. I mean, not Force Awakens, but you know, they kind of implied they have a day or two left. Like, it's not quite done in terms of just shooting it, and so that's about what I expect. I'm glad they were there. I'm glad they acknowledged that this stuff is still going on. I'm glad they talked about it. I would have liked to have seen more, but that was about what I thought it would be.
All right. I thought they were going to show a lot more. I thought we were going to get some video. But after it all, like bringing out all those people, all the different eras of Star Wars, bringing out the new Han Solo, you know, Mark and Carrie come out, I don't give a shit. I thought it was awesome. I thought it was fun. Do you know what I mean? Like, I see people on Twitter. It's just like, who cares? We had a fun weekend. And then we... Oh, they only had Mark Hamill. You know, they had Luke Skywalker.
They only had John Boyega, you know. That guy doesn't know how to put on a good show.
Yeah. I just thought it was like... I don't know. It was just like, who cares? It was an awesome weekend. And I don't know. If you're sitting at home being sad about that, you've missed the point over the whole thing.
Yeah, you missed the point. Though, you know, we can talk about how maybe some of the announcements and some of the stuff here that was the official stuff was maybe a bit of a letdown, maybe not what we wanted going in, but the actual experience of Celebration and being here and being with the fans and just experiencing everything that it had to offer was still incredible. It was still amazing. I had the best time at the booth, walking around the floor, trying the Trials on Tatooine, the X-Lab stuff. The parties after the in the evenings, before the convention even got started, there was so much fun to be had that wasn't related to, oh, they're announcing this.
Yeah, and again, you don't come to Celebration for the announcements because you're going to get that all around the world anyway. You come for the unique experiences that you can have here, like what Dominic was talking about. And as far as the announcements go, I mean, one unique experience you could have is just being around a bunch of people all experiencing excitement at the same time. And we did get that. And it came from a place we weren't expecting. It didn't come from Rogue One. It didn't come from Episode 8 or Han Solo. It came from Star Wars Rebels, which I think is a show that really needed something, like a pop to it, because I felt it was kind of falling behind in the eyes of the public, the press, even the fans behind these new projects that are so awesome. But putting Thrawn in, doing something that so many fans wanted, and it was just made so obvious by their reaction that they really, really wanted it, I think that was very important for Rebels, and it was important for this convention too, because it gave fans that moment. I feel like that was the moment of this Celebration.
Yeah, I'm very optimistic about going into Season 3 of Rebels. We saw the first two episodes. No spoilers, but one of the things that we really felt was missing from Season 2 was something connecting all of the stories, something that was driving everything forward, that it wasn't just, little adventures here and there. And I feel like we're getting that. There was some stuff in the beginning of this episode that felt like it was building on things that had happened previously and was setting up what's to come. And so it looks like it's righted the course a little bit after a couple of missteps last season.
Are you implying that Season 3 opens up at the Heli Saber Factory?
Yes, that's an exclusive for you.
Yeah, I don't know. I sort of don't care, like, about the whole... Like, it would have been cool, but I was sort of just like, I just had so much fun. Like, I did things that were insane. I, like, just had so much fun. Like,
you've had, like, 9 hours of sleep in the past 5 days. It's incredible. Like, 9 hours of sleep, that's supposed to be, like, good for one night. That's the last 5 days.
And here's the other thing. This is it, the last day of Celebration. It's very emotional. Oh, wait. What a heartless wench.
Yeah. Those announcements are the cruelest thing. Yeah. Like, they're just like, just keep rubbing it in.
Just heckled in the middle of your podcast. But yeah, like, we haven't seen each other for a year. And, you know, this is an emotional time because I'm not going to see you guys for like a whole 3 days.
I know, it's crazy. Comic-Con is next week, so... So we're not getting any more sleep. It's just gonna be more wacky, crazy adventures. But no, yeah, it's a very good point. When I went to your show last Sunday before the convention, I was checking Facebook, and you know how on Facebook you get those like little look back on what you were doing this day in other years, and I checked it, And it was literally one of the pictures was you and I with our ILM t-shirts in line for Hall H. And I was like, wow, this is kind of perfect. And so, you know, to get to hang out some more and create some new memories that involve a lot less walking, but also a lot less sleep. So, you know, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, I just love, and, you know, I try to, with these blog pods, sort of cover all that, you know, the fun stuff that happens. But I have to tell you guys, there was a lot of other stuff that couldn't make it onto the blog pod. It was incredible. A lot of late nights, and for some bizarre reason that it drives us, a lot of early mornings. I was telling Jackie, it was like, oh, how come you haven't had much sleep? Why didn't you sleep in? I'm like, I've been up at like 5 a.m. every morning. It's insane. So I'm going home, and I'll get home on Monday night, and I think Tuesday I'm just going to get like bath salts and just lie in a bath, like get like a ghetto Bacta tank going, and just try to, like, one day of health before I get the train down to San Diego with Gonk, and it all starts again.
Yeah, although it's weird to think of Comic-Con as like the calmer convention for us, but you know, after the insanity that was this, the overnight lines, the early mornings, you know, Comic-Con, there isn't a huge Star Wars presence. There isn't that Hall H panel. There's just some smaller stuff that we just, you know, need to be on time for, basically. We don't have to be there at 5 in the morning or 4 in the morning or earlier to do all that stuff. So, it's Comic-Con is insane, but it will be like a walk in the park after this.
Oh, yeah, like, I'd sort of planned, like, to do little interviews with, like, you know, publishers and stuff, and they were like, oh, yeah, either, you know, Comic-Con or here. And then halfway into day one, I was like, oh, I'm not going to have any time to do any of that. It is hard, like, compared to Comic-Con, where it's, you know, like, every maybe fifth booth you might be interested in, like, it might have a Star Wars thing. Here, it's full on.
Yeah, that's what makes Celebration the best, is it's all Star Wars all the time. I just suddenly became Lucasfilm's pitchman right there. It's all Star Wars all the time. Come on down to Celebration. Orlando, May or April, what is it?
April something.
April. I just lost my job as Lucasfilm publicist. Me and the guy who was running the projector at the Rogue One panel were out.
All right, you guys, highlight of Celebration.
Well, like I said, Thrawn was pretty big. But, I mean, personally, just having a booth for the first time as the Star Wars Underworld was a really awesome experience. And we got to experience this celebration kind of differently than other celebrations as a result of that. I mean, before it was about running around everywhere and getting as many pictures and videos and interviews as possible to share to our fans. And here, it was more about having the fans come to us at the booth and meeting all of them. And it was different, but it was really, really, really cool, and I'm glad that we got to have that experience.
Yeah, that was crazy to have people, as I'm sure you had plenty of times throughout the weekend as well still, people come up to you and be like, oh my God, I love the show, oh my God, or people that were like nervous to come up to us. I'm like, no, that's not how this works. I'm supposed to be nervous to go up to other people. Other people are not supposed to be nervous to go up to me. But yeah, so that was incredible. But I mean, it's hard to, even that is hard to top the ILM X Labs experience. That was incredible. Like, I can't put into words how much fun that was. I thought it would be gimmicky. I thought it would be kind of okay, but it was just the best time. And I'm so psyched for the fact that they're making a full game of that. And that'll finally get me interested in Star Wars gaming again, I think.
Yeah. I think I'll have to go. I'm just trying to think of like maybe four things as far as a Star Wars experience. The ILM thing was insane. Like, it was like, I went in totally sort of like a bit, I was like, yeah, well, like, it's going to be sort of a bit hokey, but like, when I was reaching out to touch R2-D2, it was like...
When you get the lightsaber in it, when you finally get to hold the lightsaber and you see it, the blade moving in the correct motion with you moving your lightsaber, with you moving your hands, it's the best feeling ever.
Yeah.
Like, you have the dopiest grin on your face the whole time, and I could hear Steele in his booth playing it, because I finished a little bit before him just because of the way it's staggered, and so I'm waiting for him outside the booth. I can hear him playing it, and I just hear, oh!
Excellent impression, Dom. But yeah, like, after, I was so disappointed by the Wii when you held the lightsaber that it was, yeah, to get, have R2-D2 flick you up a lightsaber, that was sweet. So that was one thing. The panel, like a panel memory was like Mendo coming out in uniform. That was just sick. Very surreal to have a Star Wars character come out. Like, have we ever had like a character come out in costume? Oh, I guess we had the creatures and stuff.
We had BB-8. But I'm trying to think of anything quite like that. I mean, Steven Stanton voices Tarkin on the show, on the animated shows. He showed up at Celebration 6 in a full Tarkin getup. That was pretty cool because he was doing the voice and everything. But never a live-action actor showing up to an event like that and being in character quite like that.
Another highlight was the late nights of hearing crazy stories and... hanging out with people I'm not allowed to mention. It was awesome. But I think like doing the 100th episode and just having people from all around the world come up and say hey, and it was bizarre. Like, it's bizarre to be at a Star Wars convention and have, but just people happy to see you.
Yeah.
And I was thrilled to have a very full live podcast and all standing room, because I did, you know, you have those things of just like, yeah, it's going to be bad if I've got empty seats. That's a bad vibe, you know. But yeah, just that and all the people that came up and said hey, and we got photos. It was really cool. Everyone was like so nice.
In all seriousness, that for me too, at the booth here, was mind-blowing and definitely highlight of Celebration, even more so than X-Labs.
Yeah. And then there's this crazy things like Pablo like tweeting out the Your Snoke Theory Sucks sticker and just fun little things like that, and how well received those two stickers were and all that fun stuff, and hanging out with you guys and all the crew, and it was awesome. So that is it. Star Wars Celebration, London, Europe, 2000 whatever year this is. I'm so tired. I will do the classic Star Wars Underworld outro in honor of Kreese Sequel. For Kreese Sequel, for Dominic Jones, I am Steele Saunders, and I do love Star Wars. May that force be with you, you guys.
It's a wrap.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.